Advanced CE government. Got to get used to the House terminology here. I believe we had some questions on the executive summary you were going to review. Was that where you were going to start? Was that your recommendation?
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't you just go ahead and get them on the record, and at least you have one person listening to you.
Okay, Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Dave White, Chief Information Officer for the Department of Transportation. In Monday's session, we had six questions, and we provided answers, written responses to the committee. There was a coral-colored executive summary of the questions and a more detailed background behind that. And I'll go through these briefly, and if you have questions, we can address those as we go. First question was around telecommunications cost breakdown for the department. And the telecommunications budget in the governor's recommended budget is comprised of primarily base, and then there were some additional dollars in some of the program or policy option packages to the tune of $177,000. And what we were able to do in the time we had was to look at the actual expenditures for this current biennium and break those out by the types of services. And this depicts their regular phone service, about 68% of those expenditures, long distance, 800 numbers, and cell phones, and so forth. There was a question about the cost benefit for project delivery initiatives, and I think this is a good opportunity to sort of step back and look at the project delivery program as a whole. Basically, it started back in the 98 time frame when some studies were conducted by the Secretary of State Audit Division, Legislative Audit Committee, and the ODOT Efficiency Committee, and Dye Management Group. And all those studies recommended that ODOT should put in processes and systems to improve the efficiency of project delivery, highway project delivery. In the last session, in addition, House Bill 2478 was passed and reaffirmed that same direction. At the direction of House Bill 2478, the department did put together a proposal of how we could satisfy the functionality that would be required to better manage the scope, schedule, cost, total cost management, and allocation of resources on projects. And as part of that analysis, we looked at work that the Washington Department of Transportation had done. And they had basically invested $12 to $15 million implementing their model, and also incurring about $1 million of biennium in ongoing costs. We looked at that and said that seemed a little steep. We stepped back and looked at what we already had in-house and felt that we could meet the objectives set forth in House Bill 2478 with a program put together around the $1.1 million. And so the initiatives that we have in this package, I believe there's five separate projects that total up to that amount. Those are the individual pieces that deal to provide that functionality for project delivery.
That $1.1 million?
Mr. Chair,
the $1.1 million. Okay, that has been used at this particular point, or are you in process with that now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, $1.1 million is in the current governor's recommended budget. There were five separate projects that add up to that. So no,
okay,
that has not been.
I'm with you now. This isn't something that was done during this biennium.
Correct. Okay. Number three question was provide source of funding for the Oregon Plan, Sandwich Corridor maps, and 80% of that funding came from Federal Highway Administration, State Planning and Resource Program funds. The other 20% was funded out of the State Highway Fund. Provide an update on the progress of project cost accounting and IT initiatives that supported that effort. And I think I may have probably confused myself and confused some of the members of the committee on Monday. I think I may have combined two different initiatives, so this sort of sets it out separately. In the last session, we had Senate Bill 614, the full cost accounting initiative, Bill 4 ODOT, and which directed ODOT to develop a full cost accounting system. Attached in your materials is a letter from Executive Director Mike Marsh to the House Transportation Committee, which provides a status of that work. In effect, at this point in time, the cost accounting has been implemented for the Highway Division and Transportation Development Division, and plans are in place to implement it through the rest of ODOT. On the project side, as I mentioned earlier, House Bill 2478, and particularly Section 10, stated that ODOT would provide projected expenditures for the biennium for each project covered within the highway construction plan, and not only projected, but then also providing actual dollars spent against that plan. And again, referring back to one of the initiatives that we have in the current governor's recommended budget, the total cost, the total project cost initiative addresses that portion of House Bill 2478. A question was asked as to the underspending of Y2K and where the dollars went for that. There's a chart in your packet that shows the budget for each biennium, 95, 97, 97, 99, 99, 01, what we actually spent, the amount underspent. Basically, for the information systems organization that I manage, we are not a revenue, we are not a fee-for-service organization. So we get our funding through assessments to the rest of the organization. So if we, in the case of Y2K, for the first two bienniums there, when we underspent, those dollars remained in the other divisions, such as DMV, motor carrier, highway, and so forth. In 99-01, those dollars that were underspent were applied to the overall department budget reduction that was initiated to meet the decrease in revenue projections. Question six, provide information regarding the difference between PC users and number of PCs. And I want to make sure that we have the right number of users. We're talking about the user population. Table A shows our total user population, and that is everybody that logs onto our network or our mainframe. 466 of those people are external to ODOT, giving us a total of ODOT personal computer users of 4,070. Number of PCs we have within the agency, it shows there is 4,730, and then leaving unassigned PCs of 660. And in the detail accompanying the report to you, we have it broken out where those unassigned PCs are. For the most part, for many of these PCs are being used simply as print servers. Others are being I would consider below our particular minimum that we're trying to maintain in the organization, and they're on the path to surplus, but we keep them and use them for test machines and other types of devices such as that. So, Mr. Chair, those are the answers to those questions.
So I'm back at the number ones inside. I apologize. Being late in terms of looking at the telecommunications. Um, 68% of 10 million is about 6.8 million. How many, are we corresponding, I mean, regular phone service is dial phone?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
So, so dial tone on the desk for 4,000, is that how many, I'm trying to get a sense in terms of how many, lines we're looking at, do we have?
Mr. Chair, it's about 4,000, lines within the agency.
So, so, what did I buy?
Oh, 71.
So why are we spending $75 a user on a telephone line, or a telephone service?
Mr. Chair, before you came in, explained to the committee that in the time that we had to put together this particular report, we pulled the data that we had and pulled the actual data year-to-date across the agency, and based on the type of vendor, that's how we came up with these numbers. We've not been able to do a line-by-line analysis to answer that particular question.
Okay, so what are actuals today? Are you underspending or overspending this line item today?
Mr. Chair, my recollection is we're underspending. The total for 17 months year-to-date is about $6 million.
And what was budgeted?
Mr. Chair, I don't know. Yeah.
We have, what was the line item for last biennium? Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the biennial estimate for 9901 is $10,879,403.
We've got 1, 2, 3 months to go. So, historically, I'm just...
Mr. Chair, again, the numbers that we had, that $6 million was based on 17 months. And yes, looking at it, we're going to come in quite a bit under, and that's the analysis we're still trying to get the data on to find out what that difference is.
Okay. So... it would look to me that that line item is too much. Suggestions from the committee members? I just, we're spending 60%, or I mean, so 70%. I don't know how, I mean, I don't know what the burn rate is. I guess we can divide 17 into 6 million and see what the burn rate is. We can come up with a figure. That's a pretty significant under amount that can be used to distribute it elsewhere in the budget.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can you tell us what is this $6.2 million? Is it highway dollars, or is it federal funds, or is it general fund? What is the source of this money? I mean, $6.2 million, because there's certain restriction that we can use highway money, highway tax money, or federal or general fund money. Well, there's no restriction to general fund dollars.
Okay.
The source
of the revenue is up under the second bullet item.
Mm-hmm.
It came from the revenue generating operations, DMV, motor carriers, rail, public transit, safety, and highway. So it's, and that was it. And then the trust fund dollars as well.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
It's all trust fund.
So they're all gas tax money?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Can you use it to put it in highway division?
Well, that's what I'm seeing in terms of if we're underspending the account, the $10 million account, and by, you know, and we'll underspend in this by any end, and then could we increase it?
Mr. Chair, the governor's recommended budget is slightly lower than the biennial estimate. I have a suggestion if you want me to take it back and take a look at it.
Well, I mean, I think in terms of rather than us deciding where it goes, we'll just make a recommendation to the committee to cut the line item, and the transportation committee can decide in terms of where to reallocate those dollars
mm-hmm.
most appropriately in the budget. But in terms of, keep in mind, what is the recommended reduction already that we're taking on the long distance savings? And what I'm saying is that we need to also make a appropriate reduction based upon the percentage of use of those dollars. So in terms of, we've got long distance rates are going to fall. So we're calculating
$721,000
there, but we need to do a proportional reduction in the total line item, because if they're underspending that account, then those dollars, and the committee can make a choice in terms of where those dollars go, unless we think there's an additional need within, if we want to make a recommendation, dollars within the IT perspective. But I haven't seen any or heard any needs, and we'll give you that opportunity to sort of say you want to direct somewhere else. But I would be thinking that we'd end up just making a recommendation to make a reduction and let the transportation committee figure out where they think it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes into, you know, highway, you know, mm-hmm. safety.
Mr. Chair, I'd be curious of your response. What does that do to you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, with the looking, come up the same numbers as the chair, that looks like we are underspending with the analysis we did in the last day and a half. And I don't know what number that is. And I have the same question. I'd like to know either why, is it a budget question, or is it an accounting question, or is it a
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in my review of the department's budget and looking at their 18-month actuals, they do appear to be underspending their line item accounts, but their billings lag about 2 to 3 months behind the actual budget, so that there is actually more that's expended and that will be spent out of this budget, because they have until December to bring their accounts in line with what was actually billed and used and billed before June 30th. So there is a little bit of adjustment. I think that there probably is some room for a little bit of reduction there, but we need to take those issues into account before we reduce it.
We get staff to come up, and I'm trying to understand what the rate is for telecom charges. And I'm taking gross numbers here. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Barbara Conway. I'm the strategic planning and review and analyst for ODOT. The telecom rates are a mix of administrative costs, line charges, equipment charges, setup fees. So there's sort of an amalgamated rate. For 0103, the rates were reduced from the 9901 rates by, and I'm estimating here, I believe it was over 10%. I can say, however, that the billings are behind for the unit, and so that's why the year-to-date or biennial-to-date rates or costs for the telephone charges may be lower than we're budgeted.
Okay. So we were going to say, I mean, absent the dollars that ODOT pays over the top of for the CPE equipment that they're paying for and operating, do we have a line cost per line charge? Just group it all together, and is it $10, $20, $100?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to get that information for you, but I will do that.
Mr. Chairman, Are there any savings from the credit card charges? Because I thought there was discussion about the credit card charges that that they don't need to charge us for credit card charges because they get money from the fees, the 1.9% fees they charge, and therefore they shouldn't charge the department for any additional charges.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, on the issue of credit card charges by the banks, that's still being researched by the Treasury Department. There is no known agreement with the bank and the state for not charging on the use of credit cards at this point, and but they're looking into that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that was discussed
that's
during
the other committee.
Substantive committee.
Yes.
That they already charge 1.9% for fees. Why do they want to charge the department for using credit cards?
So, I mean, so we're talking about the discount on debit and credit card usage?
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of what is the effect? I mean, is that you run through your guys' shop in terms of you guys managing, or is that a different group?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the department doesn't use credit cards yet.
Oh, okay.
They have an initiative to create the ability to use those in the future, and there was some discussion in our Transportation Economic Development Committee.
There's a policy option package there, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Actually, Ms. Part of the fee package.
Right. Actually, Mr. Right. Chair, Motor Carrier Division does use some credit card transactions, and they do carry those merchant fees within their base budget.
What's the discount?
I believe it's the 1.9% is what we're charged.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have seen some of the discount fees that Treasury has, and it depends on the type of card that is used. They can range from personal to commercial cards, and the discount rate will vary between Visa and MasterCard. They can go anywhere from 1.9 up to 3.2%, I believe.
That's horrendous.
Yes, sir, it is.
It shouldn't be more than 1.5, and it probably should be lower. For the volume of state it drives them, since I doubt we're going to go out of business. And so in terms of if you can go out in the street and get a merchant account with a 1.5 discount, I think the state should be able to do better in negotiating. Who is centrally negotiating? Is this Treasury, or is every agency left to their own devices in negotiating discount rates on credit cards? Is that part
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't know. I believe Treasury has the master list.
Is there anybody in charge? Do you know what agency? Which agency is the lead agency? Is DAS? I mean, is this going to be part of the e-government initiative as part of the clearinghouse and transactions?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the current e-government project within DAS is looking at various ways to use the credit card accounts. Right now, I don't think a determination has been made on how exactly those accounts will be handled.
Okay. But I don't think so. We don't know which agency is going to take the lead for everybody else in establishing banking relationships, or is that the Treasury?
Mr. Chair, the Department of Treasury has responsibility for the entire state. For banking relationships, and
okay.
I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that they would take responsibility for that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
I can check.
I think that in Transportation Committee, we heard from motor vehicles, and there's an option package of charging something like $500,000, if I remember correctly, for the advantage of using credit cards. So Representative Patridge said we discussed this in efficiency government, that this $500,000 may not be necessary. Do you recall, Susie?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I don't recall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I believe that discussion was around the policy option package and the particular dollars for moving to credit and debit cards in the DMV field offices, and those dollars are specifically identified to make modifications to the DMV systems internal system so they can handle credit cards, because they were never designed to do that. I think the conversation came up was there an opportunity to approach U.S. Bank to possibly front-end that development work so we can get into the business with them, as I recall the discussion was yesterday, which is an interesting question to ask them.
And I would think that should definitely be part of the conversation. If anybody wants to charge us a discount for, you know, possibly millions of dollars in terms of transactions running through the system, we think in terms of the cost of encouraging us to adopt them and drive it into all levels, they should be up fronting those costs for us rather than us having to front the cost and then pay a high discount rate. It's just unconscionable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Chair, you asked who is the lead agency in negotiating?
I think the answer is Treasury.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
So we have Treasury next week for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we will make that a topic of discussion with them
mm-hmm.
as to how they think, and if needs be, I'm sure we can find someone from the Oregon Banking Association, Bankers Association, to show up, and we'll start talking discount rates,
mm-hmm.
why they think it's important to charge us more than they're charging a restaurant down the street. So that'll be an easy answer. Cool. So, how do we resolve this conversation about trying to determine how much to lop out of this line item on telecommunication charges?
So, Mr. Chair, if I may make a suggestion that we go back as the agency and spend some more time to be able to gather the data we need, get back with the LFO with the the numbers and recommendation. And,
okay. I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any further questions, Senator Yee? Where did we leave off?
Mr. Chair, we had reached the point we were ready to get into the 14 questions for this committee. They're under the tab answers to questions, and just step through those. First one deals with the IT budget on page 23 under the tab budget. Page 23 deals with the budget for the Central Information Systems Organization, which is my organization. The governor's rec budget for that is $62,700,000. And as I mentioned in our opening remarks, that about 25% of the information technology and the costs within ODOT are in other limitations. On page 24, this gives us an entire picture of all the IT costs by the various limitations, showing before POPs and then the impact of the policy option packages that we have, and then the total after the POPs of $85 million. On page 25, this is a policy option package 471. A little bit of background on this. As I mentioned on Monday, the complexity with the information technology organization, ODOT, is large, getting larger, and has grown very rapidly over the last 4 or 5 years. To keep up with that growth, we have relied very heavily on using external contractors, limited durations, temps, whatever we could use at the time. And overall, we do have a staffing strategy that we're trying to follow, and that is, first of all, as technologies mature, those are our leading candidates to outsource or look for a external provider. And an example, as I mentioned the other day, consolidation of mainframe processing with DAS IRMD. It's a very mature technology and is one that we could provide, have somebody else provide services for us. Same as a wide area network. In fact, we have very little internal effort in managing the wide area network today. We also, as we have unique applications or unique technologies, strategy there is to have the vendor or provider maintain that environment. Example, it was in DMV is a digital fuller licensing that Polaroid manages for us. In more carrier division, the Way in Motion system is maintained by the vendor provider of that system. So that's a second strategy. The third one is as we have specific initiatives come through, and if we don't have the staff internally to put on those initiatives, then we would contract out project by project. And that's reflected in the initiatives with professional services dollars. But as we do that, we want to use internal staff as project managers, as architects, having business content experts on those projects, and then also have our staff available to have a technology transfer from the vendor before they disappear, or from the contractor before they disappear and hand the system off gracefully so we can support it ongoing.
So let me understand here. So as part of this is looking to convert 21 positions which are currently being services which are being provided by contractors. What's the nature of these 21 people? What are they doing?
Is
it 21 people or is it?
Mr. Chair, in the there's a tab back under Prop 471, but primarily the types of positions are programmers, systems analysts, junior project manager type of people, PC support, server support, those types of functions. The contractors in this case that we're trying to that we want to convert into permanent staff are people who are providing ongoing everyday support to our system. In other words, we're not going out for a specific project with a specific time frame and bringing in three or four contractors to work on that project and leave. These are folks that are providing that ongoing support. And several problems exist with that particular strategy. One is turnover of contractors is very high. Second of all, the cost of obtaining contractors is very high. In some cases, almost as 20% of the cost of the contract. And thirdly, with interpretation of ORS around even people coming in for temporary type assignments, such as these contractors do, the 6-month limitation falls in place as temp workers. And so that means we've got our contractors turning over every 6 months. So if you got somebody working on a DMV system or on a motor carrier system or on our accounting system, whatever it may be, you've got a continuous retraining of people who are you're requesting to maintain those systems. So what we want to do is for that ongoing support is take those professional services dollars and convert those to in permanent positions and hire permanent staff for that ongoing support.
Okay. So where does the savings come from?
The savings in the table back under under the 471 tab back there, we put together a table that shows the hourly rate that we're paying for contractors of these types on the average, and then looked at what that costs to bring in permanent staff and including fully loaded payroll plus other S&S that it takes to support personnel and, in fact, demonstrates in just about all cases for each one of those positions, we do save money.
So under the line month employed, is it the month that that person has you in pain, or is that an estimate of the number of months the position will be funded for?
I believe Mr. Chair, the column months employed is the number of months the new person would be on board. So we didn't load this for 24 months for everybody with the recognition that it obviously takes time to hire and bring staff in. So some of these functions would still be contracted out until a new staff is on board.
So do you have any in your contracts that with the existing contractors, any requirements that prohibit you from hiring? Are there any conversion costs associated that if you were to convert someone who is employed by a contractor, that you are then going to have to pay a penalty or a premium to the contractor to make them a state employee?
Mr. Chair, we do not have those clauses. Might also add that for this current biennium 9901, we had a similar option package that we did some conversion of some staff for this biennium as well, and did I think demonstrate that we were able to execute this and in fact achieve the savings that we said we could. So it is a strategy that does in fact work.
Okay, so can we get an analysis in terms of what happened in the current biennium? Did he make an equivalent reduction in personal services? Okay. So I'm assuming you've got a detailed somewhere out what the success story is.
Mr. Chair, yes, we can provide that to you. We have also provided that to LFO. But the Mr. Chair, the table on page 25 also shows that that included in this request are two new positions, which over and above the conversion, and this is anticipation of increased growth, particularly driven by 7x24 support.
What were the limited duration positions?
Mr. Chair, what are the limited duration?
What were they?
Some are, programmers. There's two programmers, two junior programmers, a PC technician, and there's also some contract analysts that basically work on the front end of developing contracts and goods and trade services contracts, as well as perform contract administration within our organization.
What were the limited duration?
Mr. Chair, I'll have to go back and see what the strategy was at that time, but they were limited duration, I believe, and I'll get back to you if I'm wrong, but I believe they were limited duration as part of the Y2K effort. And because of all the contracting that was going on with Y2K, and they were limited duration throughout this biennium, the contracting work, whether for new projects, for goods and trade services, and so forth, has not gone away. The more infrastructure we add, the more contracts we have.
What infrastructure are we adding?
Mr. Chair, whether it's, for example, we've added um, new mainframe tools, development tools for the mainframe, for example, which is on a license agreement, say, for example, comes up for renewal annually. And it takes, as that comes up for renewal, every time somebody has to do the front-end work of getting that back through procurement, if it's over $75,000, over to DOJ, and working with the vendor to get that license renewed. We have in the neighborhood of 100 separate software packages, for example, that have to go through that same cycle. That's one example.
On a yearly basis.
Mr. Chair, some of those on an annual basis, some are on a 2-year cycle, some are on 3-year cycle. I believe most of our mainframe licenses are on annual cycle.
So where are the efficiencies for becoming more efficient? I mean, you put in a new tape library over there. We were over at Revenue and saw the tape silo sitting there. Is that so complex that this requires additional bodies? I'm just trying to understand where do we get some efficiencies and where do we get some savings? Can you estimate how many positions you're not asking for, or, as you shift things around, as the technology allows you to do more things, become more efficient? Your mission isn't expanding. We have less and less money and more needs out on the roads, and just trying to understand in terms of how 9 people that were hired for Y2K are suddenly needed to continue on with the rest of the work.
Mr. Chair, first of all, correction on the people who were hired for Y2K were the contract administrators. There's those 4 positions. The others were not Y2K positions.
Okay, why were they limited duration?
Mr. Chair, it was required for some project work that came up that was going to last longer than the 6-month cycle for temporary type people. So we went with temporary so we could, went with limited duration so we'd have the people in there for a longer period of time.
Are there any limited duration positions which you're not asking to convert to full FTE? Or I'm just curious, so how many limited duration positions are dropping off? So I get some sort of estimate here, or is it everything that was limited duration, you're now coming in and asking to make permanent FTE?
Mr. Chair, I believe we do have some dropping off, but I want to look at that and get back to you on that particular question.
And then the question that I prepped you for, have you used any FTE position dollars? Did you convert them and move them anywhere else in the last biennium?
Mr. Chair, we did look into that, and the answer was no, we have not done that. I think, Mr. Chair, you also mentioned achieving efficiencies and so forth, that, in fact, in our data center combination of technology such as the tape silo, putting in new disk drives, that we've been able to compress our batch processing cycle down so that we're almost no processing done during graveyard shift now, so we have cut back staffing on that shift, and
that staffing is now somewhere else?
I...
Is there a reduction in FTE someplace that I'm not seeing?
Mr. Chair, I believe that particular staffing, because it was either an ISS 2 or 3 level, was eliminated and used for permanent funding for reclassifications.
Is last biennium? This current biennium?
This current biennium.
So, when I said, did you use any FTE other than hiring a person, the answer then is, yes, you did. Because you took FTE dollars and so to pay for reclassification.
Mr. Chair, I guess, and the original question then, I guess I misunderstood as to use of those dollars. We kept it in the permanent funding for personal services.
So how many FTE positions that were going to be bodies are no longer bodies because you used those dollars to then pay for existing bodies?
Mr. Chair, within the IS organization, I believe, again, I'll double check on this, but I believe it's 2 positions. Again, they were low-level positions.
Mr. Chair, there is a reduction in the total number of FTE positions that the governor's recommended budget is advancing that includes this package that increased to 35. There's a net, there's a reduction of 6.6 FTE.
After or before?
After.
Where are those positions coming from?
Where are they coming from? This is the information system.
No, the reductions. So if there's a 6 reduction, so there's 47 positions disappearing sometimes. Is that math correct?
I'm not.
If in the total budget, there is a reduction of 6, and we're adding 41.
That's correct.
So where did the other 47 come from?
Mr. Chair, the part of the increase in positions for I'm tracking with what you're saying. I don't know. I'll have to look. Good question.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Mike Marsh is in the audience. He may have a better answer than Dave or I have been able to come up with.
Mr. Chair, just if I can help out a little, Mike Marsh from ODOT.
Welcome.
Thank you. If the question is relating to positions that have been reduced, in other words, we've come in with a package that as employees we're reducing contractors in limited duration, we are eliminating those contractors which are not positions but are contracts. And so those contractors would not be on our rolls anymore, nor would the positions which were established on a limited duration basis. So
those contractors are not added into FTE, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So where is the reduction of 47 FTE coming from?
Well, they're not counted as FTE, but we're counting them there to show you here on this chart to say contractors replaced by FTE.
I understand in the context of this, there's an increase of 41 positions, but overall there's a reduction of 6. So if I take 6 plus 41, where did the reductions occur in positions?
To make sure I'm tracking,
so,
Mr. Chair,
so if you didn't add 41 in, which you're requesting here, somewhere there's then an additional 41 positions which are being reduced. And where are those FTE being reduced?
Mr. Chair, we are actually adding the FTE in here. This package does add FTE.
What your budget shows is that your biennial estimate for 9901 in information systems is 223.06. That's current biennium. The governor's recommended budget is 216. And so if you're adding position, there's a 47 have gone somewhere else. Did we shift them to other programs? Did we...
Mr. Chair and Susie, the estimate for the current biennium, I believe, includes limited duration positions.
The 223.06.
So those will be eliminated.
That's where the 47 went.
Right.
Okay.
So you're just keeping nine. You want to keep just nine of, so there are 38
in essence,
positions,
yes, Mr. Chair.
Disappearing.
How do you get 38?
One other thing, Mr. Chair, I thought I'd follow up on there is to make sure we're clear. One of the reasons why Mr. White is taking this is because I and others are on him to make sure that we're complying with the law that says we can't hire people on a temporary basis on an ongoing, when it's really ongoing. And so he's feeling pressure from others and all of us, as well as himself, to try to manage within what he has. And we can't continue to have folks there for ongoing work. And we're trying to find efficiencies, such as combining with DAS on the data center. But there just is a body of work that it has to be completed for the base level work. Again, we are reducing the budget overall, both for this package as well as overall in the IT area, where the percentage of IT work within the agency and the percentage of the overall budget goes down next biennium that is going to IT, because we're trying to get money on the road. But bottom line is, in order to manage even the reduced level and the flat, this kind of level of work is required, and they went through the reasons for that, and dealing with the continuity and the fact you have an investment in a person, not have to retrain them, that kind of thing.
So how many people are losing their jobs with the elimination of limited duration?
Mr. Chair, I think what we're saying is that those positions then would be opened up to competition for actual ongoing positions. All these limited duration positions, the 11 shown here, will no longer be permanent positions, will not be permanent positions. So I'd have to look at our personnel folks to ask about the exact process for that. But I believe since we're establishing new positions, there'd have to be a competitive process for those people coming in. All the contractors will be no longer in positions. Many of those are individuals that may apply for an ongoing position.
Good. Okay. So I'm tracking here. The difference between the 47 positions, 38 of them, so I got nine here, limited duration being converted. Okay, so now I have 38 other limited duration positions. Are those filled with people? In other words, is there someone who has been employed who will no longer be employed? So are the 38 people who are going to get a pink slip, or are they positions that were never filled, or are they positions that, I'm just trying to understand here, or of the 38 positions that are being eliminated, there are really only nine bodies, and...
go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all, people who are in limited duration positions, if there is a like position that opens up, you can do a direct appointment, so they don't have to compete. That's one thing.
But I'm just being black and white here. Right. The position they're in today will end. So all things being equal, how many people would be set out on the street, kicked out because they do not have a job through the elimination in the budget of those 38 positions?
Mr. Chair, with the limited duration positions that we have identified in this package, these are the only limited duration positions we have currently filled within information systems.
Okay. So
if this package doesn't go through, the answer to your question would be nine.
Okay. So then the dollars that were given for those 38, so now we're down to 29. So what did you do with that money if they weren't bodies? If they weren't paying salaries with that limited duration FTE, what do we do with that money?
Mr. Chair, that money is phased out in their essential packages as the budget is advanced. So there is a reduction in the personal services line item for those salaries.
Okay. But what did you spend it on? If it wasn't a body sitting there carrying the salary, I'm just curious, what did you spend it on?
Chair, that what we're talking about is making a services and supplies payment to a contractor, or making a personal services payment to a limited duration position.
I'm talking this biennium.
You're talking about the new biennium.
I'm talking the current biennium. We had 38 positions, which are going to disappear. They phased out. Gotten the dollars are moved out. What do you, if there's only really 9 bodies, what the other, what did you spend the money for that was earmarked for 38 FTE positions?
Mr. Chair.
It wasn't a person.
I apologize to the committee. When I was looking at this, I was looking at the agency's base budget, not their total budget for information systems. They have, their biennial estimate is 232, and their governor's rec is 269 FTE. So the packages were, hadn't been added into that number yet.
So that compounds my problem.
Just a quick hit, Mr. Chair, on that issue of people. Right. There are people there that are doing work. Some of those people are contractors. Some of those people are limited duration. They are bodies. They are doing work and they're receiving money.
The contractors are being paid out of a different line item. So why do we have FTE that we're using to be contractors?
Chair, we're saying they are not FTE. That first category of 21
right.
means that they are paid out of another line item but they're being replaced by FTE. The second group of limited duration are paid out of personal services.
Okay.
And the third group is paid out of personal services.
Okay. So, and if I'm currently still tracking correctly here, that there are limited duration positions, limited duration FTE, that is going away.
Correct.
So, but there's really only 9 bodies, 9 people that breathe, receiving a paycheck out of this. What did you use the money for?
Mr. Chair.
Is it to contractors? Is it, you know?
Mr. Chair, my point of confusion was the 38 other LDs, because I was doing massive searches through my mind trying to figure out where those LDs are. I think Ms. Jordan has indicated that the numbers that she quoted there are agency numbers, not just IS. So I come back to the point that we have right now today have only those 9 limited duration positions. I think we've had those 9 limited duration positions through the biennium. And those are the ones we're looking at. The other 38 are in other limitations within ODOT.
I hope we're getting your answer, because all we're trying to say is that those LD positions, the limited duration positions, will be terminated. Those that are temporary would be terminated, and those contracts would be terminated, all replaced by employees. So those positions, ones that are on our system, would be eliminated. Even if they aren't on the system, like a temporary is not on the system, will not, that body will not be in that place.
Why is diversion from limited duration to FTE, why is that an increase?
Mr. Chair, why is it an increase from limited duration to an employee?
Mr. Chair, two reasons. One, with the primary reason is limited duration numbers here. We've added in additional S&S to cover permanent position training, telephones. workspace, you know, all the other S&S type things that tend to go with a position, not have those loaded in with a LD position or temporary positions.
So we're looking at some $35,000 a position. And what are we training them to do?
Mr. Chair, given the chart I have for limited durations, we're showing about 25,000 over the biennium in S&S.
I'm just looking here on your chart on page 25, you have 310,000, just roughly taking 9 out of 310,000, come up with 34, so I don't know how you aggregated that up, I'm just curious.
I think there's two pieces also for a permanent position over a limited duration position. The payroll overhead is higher than for LD. So it's a combination of that and the S&S being loaded in for those positions. What we're trying to do is show what best we could is what we forecast the true cost of these new positions fully loaded.
Mr. Chair, the agency's base budget reduced 6.6 positions, and then they shifted 10 positions from other areas back to IF that were either outsourced or belonged in their O6O package, and then they've added these 35.58. They have 9 limited duration positions that they are converting in that package, and that is all the limited duration positions that IF has. There are other limited duration positions in central services that have been phased out as the work is phased out.
Mr. Chair, would you like to move on through the questions here, or go to the at this time you want to go to the DMV ops, or just move on to these or handle those when we talk about
the questions?
Okay. On page 27, we talk about the personal computer information you requested. We mentioned we have about 4,730 personal computers. Within the agency, we have three basic configurations, engineering configuration, basic business computer, and then a modified business computer, which are used in DMV and motor carrier on the countertop in the field offices, primarily for point of sale type of processing or a little more stripped down machine. Purchases for 9901, 1,440 units, forecasting about the same for next biennium. Half here is our target replacement cycle. Again, by the type of build we have, where we want to be is for engineering workstations is every 3 years, business user about 4 years, the modified business machine about five, where we actually are four, five, and five respectively. The bicycle that we're currently on keeps us at about that 4 year cycle overall. On page 28, we talk about what our standards are. Hardware-wise, Dell is our hardware standard. That is new for us for the last several years. We've been a HP shop due to several reasons, and one of them being primarily price and support from vendors. We have switched to Dell, which also puts us in alignment with some of the other larger agencies. We are an NT4.0 shop, run Microsoft Office and Outlook. Thin client was looked at when we were doing PC replacements for Y2K. Both the technology and us were not ready to make that change comfortably and still make the deadlines around Y2K. We are currently reviewing our overall server and PC strategy, and as part of that, we are evaluating thin client where it may fit in for various applications. The other issue we face internally is thin client works best in an Ethernet environment. The majority of ODOT is still token ring, and so there's a considerable cost to convert the agency to Ethernet. On page 29 in the materials following that, questions about the asset management system, and I have examples of two reports that we use. The first one is out of the ODOT asset management system, and the second report is out of our system management services system, which is a Microsoft product. This is the same product that we use for pushing software changes across the network, and it's also an inventory tool. I would categorize neither of these particular systems as a true asset management system as far as being able to manage licenses and those types of things. We are active with DAS and DHS right now, participating in the portfolio management project that they're starting up, and very interested in participating in that to get a true IT asset management system in place. Page 30 highlights the 1-800 numbers the agency has. Call your attention, there's three numbers there with asterisks on them that most likely will be converted over to the new 511 number, which is the National Travelers Information Number. When that is implemented in Oregon, those three numbers will be rolled into that particular number.
What will that be?
Mr. Chair, I do not have a date on that yet.
Is there a conversion cost for that?
Mr. Chair, I do not know. I will get with the folks who are pursuing that one and.
Who pays for this?
Mr. Chair, I believe the agency would pick up the cost because it pretty much handle the same as 800 numbers as I understand it right now. The question and some of the issues why I don't know of a date yet is the multi-jurisdictional issues that come in. For example, as you put in a 511 number in the Portland metropolitan area, TriMet, for example, may want to participate in that so people can get bus information over that same number as well as highway information. So the how do we work through the multiple jurisdictions across the state and how do you handle those funding issues, I think, are still to be defined. 511 currently is only implemented in one state, and that is Kentucky, and ASHTO is pushing all the states to look at implementing, but the plans are very fluid right now.
So is it an FCC driven, or is it just who's champion?
Mr. Chair, Federal Highway.
They're going to pay for it?
Mr. Chair, I do not know of federal funds coming with that, but again, I will look into that.
Because nothing comes for free, and the cost associated with figuring out how who's going to intercept a phone call and redirect it becomes pretty expensive. Might look at bringing a budget note, not to proceed without the full coming to JLMTC with a plan and the full conversion cost.
Okay, Mr. Chair, that brings us to the initiatives. And we can step through these at the individual project level, or we can step through them at a higher level and then maybe dive into them as particular interest. The first one, we have For the highway division, as the project delivery set of projects, and these were the ones we talked about on Monday, and there are five projects interrelated. The first project of migrating the known as the transport system, migrating that to the client server environment. And as we talked about on Monday, that is being done because the vendor has dropped support on page 32. Has dropped support for that, and we're moving that to a client server. That particular transport is a suite of five applications dealing with proposal and estimating, bid letting and award, decision support tools that are used for analyzing bids, and it also has two other modules which we in Oregon do not have implemented yet. One's called Construction Administration System, and another is a cost estimating system. And a cost estimating system we are looking at.
It's modules. So this is there's an existing system you have in place.
Mr. Chair, this is the one that's on the mainframe that the vendor is dropping support on. In the initiatives, we don't show software costs because of the licensing fee we have with the with this software. It includes the client server version, so we in fact have license to that software.
Yes, question. Over at Dash Revenue, there's a wall that separates the data centers, and so to consolidate, they're going to put a doorway in. But you've got a tape silo there. DAS has a tape silo. Is there not enough capacity in a single silo to consolidate? I mean, rather than unless you guys.
Mr. Chair, I think the tape silo you probably saw is the ODOT tape silo. If you saw the tape silo on the DAS side,
right,
that is our tape silo.
Right. And then there's one sitting next to it.
Okay, then, Mr. Chair, that's new to me. I have not seen that one.
Okay. They look exactly the same.
See.
And I'm just curious why we don't share.
Mr. Chair, I would love to share, but it would reduce cost. I don't know whether ours is at capacity or not. That may be an issue. I can check with our operations folks and see if our silo is that close to capacity that can't be shared or couldn't be shared.
What? Upgrading the tape capacity.
The Mr. Chair, the also the disk storage, I believe, is now all located on the DAS side as well, and that was an arrangement we worked this current biennium that. We were running out of disk capacity for the mainframe. We had a lot of old equipment that was costing a lot of money for maintenance. And in fact, and DAS was replacing their disk storage, and so they were able to work out a deal with the vendor to move us also onto the new disk storage. And we were paying DAS a monthly rate for that disk storage. It's actually a little less than what we're paying for maintenance on the old, so we got more storage for about the same price. So we're working partnership with them on operations side. We still need to get that next step of getting the operations staff working together and get that wall knocked down or moved or a big door put through it and finish off the consolidation. The big advantage, I think, for both of us, and particularly for ODOT, will be on the mainframe tech support side, where we're running very skinny staff there, about five people supporting the mainframe, and from a operation supporting the operating system and DB2 and all that stuff. And as we combine those two staffs, there'll be some efficiencies, and certainly stop running our people into the ground supporting that system.
I would like to get an answer as to, I mean, I heard the rationale of why you have two shape silos sitting side by side, and I'd like an answer as to why we need two separate ones, but answering the question of how in the future we can consolidate those instead of what will eventually be an issue of running out of capacity, and so we need to go buy yet another one. How, if we combine them and utilize both of them, can we gain some efficiency since they cost about $500,000 a piece?
Mr. Chair, I will look into that because I'm, as I said, the last time I looked, there was one, so one sprung up when I wasn't.
Okay. Well, that is just in, it begs the question, when was the last time you were over that?
So. Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, actually just last week I was on my side of the wall. My badge doesn't get me on the other side of the wall.
Yeah. If we keep them there long enough, maybe we'll get another one. For
there we go.
Maybe they'll multiply.
Mr. Chair, continue on with the project delivery initiatives. The one we talked about the other day on the resource leveling, I did go back and did some more homework on that one. And in fact, when this plan was put together, and in particular in response to House Bill 2478, so these are things we looked at about a year ago in trying to put together sort of overall plan. How do we satisfy the functionality to meet 2478? And so this is sort of the work plan that came out of that. The $400,000, $471,000 that's in there. We actually looked at three alternatives. One was worst case, we might have to write our own code to do resource loading. The other was use the current AMS system we have, and the third was if you used another COT, commercial off-the-shelf product. So this is in there as a budget item, is the worst case scenario, and the leanings right now, I believe, are towards using AMS. So, in fact, and they're not to that decision point yet. They're still about 2 months from that decision point.
Mm-hmm.
But the leanings right now are towards AMS, so this would not be as a high figure. So.
What are we talking, half?
Mr. Chair, I would say half to a quarter. I think there would be some potentially some conversion costs. I won't know until they get to that. Again, they get to that decision point.
Okay. So, I guess that presents us another problem here. I guess we look to unschedule.
Okay. I'm going to, Chair, continue on. The next project, the project control, the interface of the project control system. Project control system is a mainframe system that's been an ODOT for many, many years. The term control in it is probably misnomered. It's more of a project inventory system. It's the system that is used to load the statewide transportation improvement program, the STIP. All the projects in the STIP are loaded into that, along with attribute information about that project as the project moves through its life cycle. It's not used as a project management system. It's more of a reporting out of the STIP.
So paint a picture for us as to what the work product is of this and who uses this. I'm just curious in terms of we get a STIP. We deliver it to us, we throw it over our shoulder, how much money are we spending to track these projects, and then if this isn't project management, it's just a glorified, I'm just curious, in terms of if you go hire a college student and give him a PC with Microsoft Access and say, here are the projects, maintain them.
Is it cheaper? I mean, I don't know what the nature of the interaction of all the components are, or, you know, it's integrated to team system or something, or, you know, and we're gathering a whole bunch of data into this, or is it just a glorified, you know, expensive database doing these projects?
Mr. Chair, Mike Wolf from the Project Development or Project Delivery Office is here, and I'd like to invite him up to talk about the specific use of that system.
Good late afternoon. My name is, for the record, Mike Wolf, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Can be a member. Thank you. I'm the Deputy for Project Delivery for ODOT. And let me see if I understand your question. What's the value of PCS, the Project Control System?
Trying to understand who uses it and what's the expression of this on a daily basis or quarterly basis. I mean, all I see is I see a step. I look at it and see if there's anything in my county, and when I'm done with that, I throw it over my shoulder and don't think about it anymore. And I'm just curious in terms of I'm trying to put reality, and is this a daily management tool, or is this a reaction to the legislature being concerned about project management? Because it's really not project management, and all it is just a listing that, you know, someday in the future, if we ever had money, we'd actually do something. I'm just curious if we stopped doing this and actually spent the money on the projects, we'd be farther ahead.
Sure. Mr. Chair, let me see if I can't address that concern. PCS is one of our oldest mainframe systems, legacy systems that we have, and right now it is the system of record for all of the STIP projects, not just highway, but as you know, the STIP includes many other things.
Mm-hmm.
And this system, the mainframe system PCS, is really tied to every other system that we use as far as accounting, financial. It used to be, years ago, the only project control system we had at ODOT.
And when you define, what do you define as project control?
Well, what you would do is you would schedule in the project with major milestones along the way and when the project would actually be let
mm-hmm.
or contract. Units within ODOT would then use those major milestones to do their work planning around.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, because the use of it was mm-hmm. so onerous, it's a mainframe system,
mm-hmm.
lots of code, it's not user-friendly at all, it began to take on more of a warehousing of data and less of a work planning function.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the Efficiency Committee and the Secretary of State audits and the focus on tighter project management at ODOT, we've listed out several of the different initiatives that actually get us to a point where we can focus on accurate project scoping, scheduling, resourcing, resource leveling, estimating costs for projects, and then managing those costs.
So is it actually doing project estimating, or is it someone's going to take that data? My question is this. If we were to hire 10 people, purchase them a pretty powerful PC, give them Microsoft Project, sit them in the corner and say, track all of these projects, get all this detail in, is that the same thing as spending $1.6 million to try to retrofit a legacy system to do something that it's not geared to go do? Or, I mean, is it be cheaper to do something else, or are we just doing this because we've got the system and so therefore we're going to go spend all this money to try to retrofit systems that nobody supports anymore, and then, you know, I need more FTE because I've got to go and support this. I've got, you know, this project. So when we start adding the total cost of these projects up, and if really what we're talking about is, you know, because I see line item 5, is to get a usable tool into the hands of somebody who can use it to manage a project, we're going to be at Microsoft Project. Is that a clear understanding of what the end of this is? And they're pulling down data out of the system?
Mr. Chair, actually, the process is very complicated, and it's hard to describe in these 5 bulleted items. PCS is our system of record. it keeps the data, the historical data, on all of the projects that we have in the current STIP and in the previous STIPs. The notion that we would be able to effectively manage, in essence, over 1,000 projects in a STIP with a PC-based application, if that was the only person in the organization that was managing all those projects, I would say we'd have a fair shot at being successful there. But when you tie in the delivery functions in the regions, several hundred individuals, in technical services as the resourcing entity for those projects, and the dynamic nature of the business, what we've lined out here are the initiatives that we believe will allow us to manage our projects and our delivery of those projects much better. These are not intended to retrofit PCS. There's one line item here that talks about as you increase the functionality of these other systems or applications, we still have to, since PCS is the system of record, we still have to make sure that we're connected to PCS. At some point in time, we're going to have to make a choice what to do with PCS. We're not at that point yet.
Why not?
We haven't completed the analysis. It's on our IRM plan, our tactical plan. We've got that scheduled in for next biennium. These were the projects in direct response to the recommendations from the Efficiency Committee and Secretary of State audits and the Dye Management Review on tightening up project management.
Okay. If PCS didn't exist and you're going to go and create a system to do this, what would you do?
I would have every one of the projects I have on this list except the one that we're talking about, which says create an interface with PCS, obviously, because it wouldn't be there. But I believe the list minus that one, those four other projects, begin to create the overall replacement for PCS somewhere down the road.
What I'm trying to understand here is, are we stopping, looking at it and saying, are we designing systems to support legacy environments? I'm not suggesting it's a bad thing. I'm suggesting that help me understand whether we've gone and said, you know, if I stop supporting this legacy system, two biennia down the road, it's going to be a heck of a lot cheaper to support this system. And so should I be arguing today that I need additional dollars today and to invest today because I can save lots of money? What I just heard you say is, well, the project on retrofitting this, you know, system of record PCS is going to be next biennia. So is it going to be, is this throwaway work and it's a reaction to the Secretary of State's audit, it's a reaction to the Dye reports, it's a reaction to the legislature beating up on ODOT, you know, and I am fully aware of that in terms of, but my question is, if we step back from all of that and we say, we're going to go out and we want to put in a state-of-the-art project management system, what would we do? And you know, in that, and I'm looking at the whole PCS versus saying I need to react to what the Secretary of State said. You know, I'm just trying to understand. Have you had that conversation? And reality is, I still have to react. And this is an approach. But I'm trying to understand in terms of if we look going to the next biennia, can we do something different, or should we be looking at spending additional dollars this biennia to save us millions down the road, or otherwise we just paint ourselves back trying to support legacy systems that become very expensive because vendors don't exist anymore that wrote the applications in the first place, and we have to take on more and more and more to support something that if we just simply said it'd be easier for us to just start anew, create the data, get it over to somebody. What are other states doing? Are they all in legacy systems? Is there off-the-shelf ERP-type systems that do project management that, you know, I mean, or, I mean, I'm just, have we looked at other alternatives before coming and saying, I'm going to retrofit legacy systems on a legacy system?
Mr. Chair, the answer to that question is yes. And the other answer is if we could recreate the past, we wouldn't have put in PCS. And when you see the project delivery work planning, the various components of that, as it begins the project delivery work planning tools, as you begin to integrate them, they become a system that does replace PCS. And so if I had the option right now, first of all, I would recommend that we reschedule number two back in, because that is a key component of replacing PCS in our plan. And the other piece, I would replace project delivery work planning interface to project control system with bolstering project delivery work planning system to replace PCS, if I had that option. I believe that's the prudent way to go.
Why don't you do that then?
We have this scheduled in, realizing that the interface to PCS may become less and less as we build the functionality in the other elements of this package. And so it becomes less of an interface and more of a replacement. That's what we believe. That's as we build the functionality and the business processes come in line throughout the organization, the use of the systems increase, we believe we will be at a point where the interface becomes more of an integration into PDWP, Project Delivery Work Planning System. This is a reflection of our best guess of what the projects going into this next biennium should be. And so I guess what I'm saying is I don't think it's throwaway work at all. I think the interface between the two systems, when we get to the point where we're actually looking at what that work is, may in fact help us see that we're ready to sunset PCS. But again, we're going through a P-plus methodology through IS where that methodology has to tell us that that's the best option or provides recommendations to us. So I'm jumping to a conclusion saying that we would...
When will you be able to draw that conclusion?
We begin, this project is scheduled for initiation, I believe, I'll have to get back to you, Mr. Chair, on exactly the date, but it's, I believe it's in the first year of the biennium when we would begin the assessment around this project.
And what are the possible options at that point once you have that information?
Well, actually, we won't know until we go through the assessment.
Would you continue on with these things, or you might find out that you shouldn't continue on with these? I mean, that's what you do it or you don't. And what I'm hearing that you're still in an assessment phase.
Mr. Chair, actually, this project hasn't even begun yet. And so what I'm saying is part of the first step in that is the assessment to answer your question, what are the options and what should we do? You had asked, is this throwaway work? And I'm attempting to answer that. I do not believe it is. I think it will get us further along in our program by keeping this scheduled the way it is.
Are these parallel projects?
Mr. Chair, are you talking about all of these initiatives? To some degree, they move along a similar path, but they have to zenith at those decision points, which would stop us from implementing redundant systems. But it's very difficult to just unplug a current system when there's many, many users.
So do you have a high-level chart, you know, Gantt chart that says what the decision points are on this and what the project plan is for this initiative? These are all interrelated, correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Yes.
You would consider all these five a single project?
Mr. Chair, that is not correct. They are separate components, but in the end, when they're all implemented, they will represent a system, a project management and control system.
So do you have to complete one before you complete two, or do you do they run in parallel? I'm trying to understand in terms of, because I'm hearing you say at some point there's going to be some analysis as to where you're going to make a decision point. What I'm trying to understand is, okay, where do we build into that a discussion to come back and talk with GLIMTC to talk about what that decision point is and what the implications are? Because I'd rather go make a good decision than a decision based upon the fact
that last session, there were a bunch of people sat around and beat up on ODOT, and, you know, I'd rather have it based upon the fact of what's the vision for the future and how we're going to achieve the goals in the future. And if we're still in the assessment phase, I can accept that. And, you know, what do we need to go do that component versus, you know, at a short-term goal, I'm more interested in the long-term goal. And do we have enough dollars? And I'm more than happy to stand up and start arguing, let's forego some of these short-term issues, if that's a prudent decision, so we can achieve our long-term goals sooner rather than later.
Mr. Chair, in reference to whether they're going in parallel or staggered, most of them are scheduled to go to what we call internally with our methodology, the preliminary analysis stage, which gets us to the point where we can make those kind of decisions. And I believe all of them, doing a quick scan, I believe all of them except resource leveling are scheduled for completion of that preliminary analysis stage in the August timeframe, August this year timeframe.
Okay.
So that gives us, I think, some of that data and gives us those options of where to move next.
So then you can present those decision points in the September JLNTC.
Now, Mr. Chair, will you do that?
Good. We are beyond the 5 o'clock. There are no more questions from my committee. And without objection, we will be adjourned.